October 11th, 2022. Leo Finance AMA. Hashtag When Soon Show. Live and direct. Show. With the infamous Cal.
And scary
Leo Cal Finance Cat. Creator. And your host, the Cat. Scaredy Cat Guide. Come find me on Leo Finance. I post sometimes these days. Because apparently I've slowed down after all these years.
I saw you post the other day, like 2 days ago.
Yeah, I did a Bitcoin post a few days ago. I'll do one today for the recap, I guess. I'll try and squeeze that in while we're doing the show. I did a lot of travel in the last couple of weeks, though, so it's tough to post when I'm on one of my like real estate benders, so to speak, and I'm not really in front of my machine.
Yeah.
I am yet to try and post on my phone. I generally just read and vote from the app. But maybe I'll get used to that. And then when I'm like sitting at the airport and not quite enough time to fire up the computer and get into a post, but enough time to like be on my phone and I can just do it the whole entire time while I'm like waiting in line and all the things.
Yep. You can always be threading.
Always I could be threading. Threading.
We need someone to memeify that clip from what is that called? Glengarry Glen. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know the term you're referring to. But at the same time, I'm forgetting what it even means. Oh my God, now my brain is not working.
I forgot the name of it, but yeah, Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, there it is.
So we need to memeify the clip of always be closing to always be threading.
There you go. ABT. Yep. Always be threading.
Always be threading.
I like it.
I've actually never seen that movie. I don't know if you're surprised that I got that reference, but
I've only seen the clip. I've never seen the movie either. It's just one of those references that is mainstream.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But yeah, we've had a pretty busy couple weeks in Leoverse. I feel like a lot of activity, and we were actually just in the pre-show. We were just talking about how Cub went from 2 cents to 2.5 cents, and it's been holding pretty steadily up here. Obviously, up here being relative to where it's been recently, not where it's been in its lifetime, but it's pretty cool to see where, you know, we're kind of, not only are we, you know, staying steady and consistent in terms of price, but we're actually grinding higher, seeing higher and higher valuations for the Cub market cap. And I think that has a lot to do with the multi-token bridge growing, and you're seeing obviously those burns get really exponential. So we're looking at about 1.1 million Cub burned now. And that number keeps growing. And actually kind of an interesting thing that a lot of people jumped in general chat about the other day was that they noticed the Cub DAO is actually buying and burning a little bit less Cub right now than it was previously. And the reason for that is actually the bridge revenue is even higher than it was before. But the amount of Cub being bought and burned is lower because the bridge basically uses the DAO contract uses a moving average for the Cub price. So when the Cub price went from 2 cents to 2.5 cents, it basically slowed down its buying activity to wait for the moving average to catch up. And then as that moving average catches up, then the buying obviously gets back. So it kind of does this interesting thing where it takes a percentage of the daily revenue and it's buying and burning Cub every single day. But if the price moves drastically, the percentage of the revenue that it uses goes down. So it'll basically stock up the revenue thinking that this might be a short-term price increase. And then that revenue obviously will be used later, but that percentage kind of drops. And then as the moving average catches up, the percentage will grind back up. So it's kind of interesting how that works. It does that for a couple different reasons. You know, obviously a big one being like if you see a random spike in the Cub price, you don't want the DAO to just go out there and just spend all its revenue on expensive Cub. The goal of the DAO is to buy cheap Cub when possible. But obviously when that moving average catches up, it'll buy back with 100% of the revenue each day. And then also use all that previous revenue if the percentage was lower. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting to see that play out because we haven't really seen the Dow contract work yet with a price that's moved up exponentially. So I think it's like a cool little experiment to pay attention to right now, to see that simple moving average catch up. So that being said, I still think, you know, based on the revenue, and the revenue is like almost 2x this month than it was last month. I think we're going to burn a much larger amount of cub this month than last month. So that's last month. What did we burn last month? I think 300,000 is the amount that we burned last month. So we'll burn somewhere above 300,000 for sure this month. I think it's going to be a lot higher than that though, if I had to guess.
What did we burn last month?
We burned 300,000.
Nice.
The exact number.
No, that's fine.
But yeah, the bridge has been growing really well lately. I think the TVL for Beehive and BHBD based LPs just hit 650K. So that's pretty amazing. And yeah, I mean, we're basically just on that. We're just on that path to growing, scaling up. I think we've got a really good model now. You know, Cub has gone through a lot of different iterations since we launched it. We've always been looking out for a model that not only worked, but actually created an environment where the Cub market cap could grow over time. And that's, you know, all the different models we've gone through, none of them have performed the way that the multi-token bridge is performing. And that becomes pretty clear when you see that burn chart and you see, you know, basically what I'll post right here in Discord, that burn chart where you just see it kind of like have this steady grind up of how much Cub is burned from the kingdoms. Yep. And then as soon as the multi-token bridge launches, it just takes off and the amount of Cub being burned is astronomical. So August, we burned 200,000 Cub. In September, we burned, where's the number? I know that number somewhere in this report. In September, we burned 317,445 Cub. So just over 300,000 Cub was burned in September and then 200,000 in August. So the cool thing about that number, and it's kind of funny that it turned out this way, is that prior to August, so from March 2020, which is when Cub launched, to August 2022, right before the multi-token bridge launched, we had burned 517,000 Cub since the start of the platform. And then in August, we burned 200,000. And in September, we burned 300,000. So we burned 521,000 Cub in August and September versus 517,000 Cub from March 2021 to August 2022. So 18 months of burned as much as 2 months of multi-token bridge. So pretty astronomical.
I gotta sneak away for 1 second. I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah, no problem.
Take this call.
So all of that is shaped up to really change the perspective of Cub, I think. And, you know, whether or not it's changed, you know, the actual perception of the value that Cub can create, I think it's actually changed the token flow in a very concrete way. And I think the easy way to see that is just to look at price, that the price has not only leveled off, but has actually started to grind up. We just went from 2 cents to 2.5 cents. So that's what Mitch and I were talking about in the pre-show. Resilencia just asked, what is the current ratio of issued Cub versus burned Cub? Yeah, so that we kind of talked about that in the full Cub burn report. But the gist of it is, last month we burned 300,000, what was it, 317,000 Cub. And the amount of Cub issued was about 800,000. So we're at about a little over a third of all Cub created each month is being burned. And I think this month we'll get pretty close to 40 to 50%, somewhere around there, of Cub burned versus Cub issued. Yeah, it's a great ratio. I mean, just being the fact that, I mean, it would be a great ish. It would be a great ratio if we were like 6 months into the multi-token bridge, but the fact that we're in only 2 months into the multi-token bridge being live and we're burning that much CUB, I think is a good indicator of what we can do if we can scale up the liquidity. A lot of this is going to come down to scaling up how much liquidity is in the multi-token bridge. So, you know, obviously on that first burn report we published, there was $297,000 in Beehive BHBD liquidity. And then in this last burn report, there was $527,000 in Beehive BHBD liquidity. So, and then, like I just said, I think as of yesterday or the day before, we hit 650,000. So that TVL just keeps growing exponentially. And that's what we need to see. We need to see that TVL number keep increasing every single day. And that's where you kind of see that escape velocity metric that I've talked about before. And obviously it's in those CUB burn reports where you see more multi-token bridge revenue than actual CUB being created. And I think we're getting very close to that. I actually think we've already breached the more speculative escape velocity, which is that the multi-token bridge revenue is outpacing the amount of CUB that's being sold every month. I think we've already hit that. And the clear indicator of that is that the price of CUB basically was flat when we started the multi-token bridge. And then now it's actually started to grind up. So you're seeing more CUB being bought by the DAO than people are selling. But obviously that more concrete escape velocity is when you're actually deflationary, burning more CUB than is being created. And like I said, I think we're about 35% of the way there. So we really just need to grow that TVL. And he said, yeah, if we get 500,000 in the HBD BUSD, it will be 10 times more used. Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to getting more liquidity because, you know, without liquidity, there's not going to be a lot of trading volume. But once we see that liquidity pick up, the trading volume is just going to continue to grow. And the funny thing about trading volume is that it's exponential. And I've written, you know, several posts talking about black hole theory. But black hole theory basically dictates that the more trading volume you get, the more liquidity you attract. Because essentially the trading volume increases, which increases the LP rewards. And in Cubs scenario, the trading volume increasing actually increases LP rewards. It also increases wrapping fees and internal arbitrage volume, which all adds up to multi-token bridge revenue in addition to just the baseline LP rewards. So trading volume is even more beneficial to us than most other DeFi projects out there since we own the derivatives. So the CUB DAO owning the derivative and benefiting from it, which is BHBD and Beehive, is what creates kind of that exponential value. And I just posted a screenshot of BHBD on CoinMarketCap. So you can see the trading volume is $24,000 in the last 24 hours. So obviously it's small relative to exchanges, but it is growing and it's growing fast. But $24,000 in
arbitrage. I said it's 101 arbitrage.
Yeah, exactly.
Quick, make some money.
Well, here's the crazy thing right now. So we're seeing all this trading volume. This kind of leads me to another point about the derivatives. So we're seeing all this trading volume, and here's a screenshot of Beehive. All Hive on centralized exchanges is currently paused. You can't deposit or withdraw Hive because of the Hive hard fork. So we had a hard fork this morning. It was a planned hard fork, an upgrade to the Hive blockchain. And that basically took all the sexes offline. So all centralized exchanges like Binance, Bittrex, and any other ones that had Hive listed are currently offline for deposits and withdrawals. But Beehive has stayed online this entire time. So kind of crazy, but it's same thing with the internal market on Hive. So you've got the internal market and then you've got Beehive that are still operational if you want to buy and sell Hive and move it around. So it kind of leads into a bigger point about the centralized problem when it comes to liquidity. And one goal that we're trying to tackle, obviously, you know, being that Leo Finance is built on Hive, being that, you know, I'm a pretty big Hive holder. I own a huge bag of Hive, and I think it's one of the most underrated blockchains and projects out there. one problem that I really want to solve is the issue of centralized liquidity. And I think Cub solves that problem. And, you know, we're starting to show it with a little bit of trading volume being pulled from centralized exchanges and onto Cub, but it's going to take a lot more TBL and Beehive BHBD liquidity to make that happen, where we can actually flip the centralized exchanges. So if you're wondering what like the 5-year mission of Cub is, it's going to be to bring more trading volume to Beehive and BHBD than centralized exchanges are doing for Hive and HBD. That's kind of the 5-year ambition. That's going to take millions upon millions and millions of dollars in liquidity. So it's going to be a long, 5 years of grinding to that goal. But you know, after just 2 months, we've got 650K in liquidity, and I think we're fast approaching a million. So we're on our way.
I totally forgot there was a hard fork that happened when today.
Yeah, it just happened 3 hours ago. So this is our live happy hard fork for Hive AMA.
Post Hive fork AMA.
Yeah, it actually
did everything go off without a hitch?
Yeah, so you know, just to talk about the hard fork a little bit, because I'm sure everyone wants to hear about it. You know, there's a few really cool changes in the hard fork, and this is probably the smoothest hard fork that I've ever seen on Hive and Steam. It's really cool to see how smooth it went. I haven't seen any real issues with the hard fork. Blue Robo saying the hard fork was nice, but JSONs eat a lot of RCs now, so beware. Yeah. So one big change in this hard fork was the resource credit cost of doing various transactions on chain. So I think someone said that custom JSONs are about 10x more expensive now. So in terms of resource credits, so it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. Obviously, Splinterlands, I think, does like 97%. Like, I think if you look at each block on Hive, about 97% of each block data is Splinterlands data. So it's going to be interesting to see what the fallout is of more expensive resource credits for things like custom JSONs, because obviously Splinterlands is custom JSON based.
Interesting.
Yeah, Blue Robo said I played a little Rabona earlier. It ate through my RC in no time. Yeah, I mean it's a big change for sure. And then also the claiming of Hive accounts, I think, is a lot more expensive now. I'm not sure by what factor it increased. I think at least like 3 to 4x more expensive to claim accounts. So yeah, I mean, it's all adding up to that long-term, you know, I just talked about the 5-year vision of Cub, you know, the 15-year vision of Hive is that resource credits will actually be one of the most important reasons to hold Hive Power. You know, I think for a lot of people right now, they hold Hive Power for mainly for content curation, because you obviously earn somewhere between like 10 and 15% for curation, depending on how you do it. And then also for witness voting and DAO, the Hive DAO. So those are kind of like the three reasons that people hold Hive Power right now. So those are kind of like the three core reasons. And then this resource credit thing is kind of this new early stage desire for holding Hive Power. I think you're starting to see Splinterlands actually kind of take a position where they need a lot more Hive Power specifically for resource credits. So when you see projects come and scale up, I think that's the long-term reason to hold Hive Power. I know that, you know, personally, I've been stockpiling Hive Power for Leo Finance, that, you know, when we onboard accounts, you know, which we do, we onboard, you know, somewhere between 100 and 400 accounts a month, every single month. And each account needs resource credits. So for us, we're always basically running through resource credits and delegating out Hive Power in order to service those users and allow them to post data on the blockchain. That's what Splinterlands is using Hive Power for. That's what we're using Hive Power for. I'm sure other projects, as they start to scale, like 3Speak and others, are going to also need to start stockpiling Hive Power to onboard new users. So That's kind of this growing desire to have Hive Power that's now made a little bit more desirable from this hard fork. And then another big change was the resource delegation ability. So now you can delegate resource credits without delegating Hive Power. So you can hold all your Hive Power, but delegate out the resource credits that they give to you. So what that means for us, and I'm talking to, if anyone here knows Deathwing, he created a service that basically can, it's like basically an API that can help you basically create your own backend to delegate resource credits. So we're going to be integrating that on Leo Finance for users that we onboard. Because right now we delegate Hive Power. So we delegate 10 Hive Power when someone signs up. And under the new hard fork, we're able to delegate just the resource credits instead of the Hive Power. So that's kind of the big change in how it affects us. And then one other thing that we're doing, you know, while we're building out this backend is something where it's actually like a variable resource credit system. So if you're using Leo Finance, let's say that you're posting threads and you start running low on resource credits, our system will read your account and see that you're low or running low, and it will start delegating you more resource credits so that you can keep using the UI without any, basically without any downtime to wait for resource credits. So there's obviously some...
pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, yeah. So there's the goal of the system is that nobody, a new user would have no idea that it exists and that it affects them. But they will just be using the Leo UI without any sort of lag time in resource credits. That's kind of the whole idea behind it. So that'll be interesting to see live in production. It'll make it a lot easier to onboard people and a lot more efficient for sure. So happy hard fork day, basically. It's it's gone off without any real hitches so far.
So now, just because I want to put it in the recap post, when you say it's essentially going to like read a user's account, you know, see if the resource credits alone, like what exactly is doing that? Obviously the back end, but.
Yeah, so basically similar to how any Hive-based UI works, you can pull data from someone's Hive account that's on-chain. So like say you go to hiveblocks.com, which is the Hive Block Explorer, you can pull data like when someone's account was created, obviously what their username is, what their voting power is, all sorts of different metrics about someone's account, because it's all obviously transparent on the blockchain. So what our backend will be doing with this resource credit system is reading the resource credit percentage that you have. So let's say that you have run your resource credits down to like 5% and now you can't, or you're getting close to not being able to even make a post or make a comment or make a custom JSON. Our system will read that you're low on resource credits and it will just automatically delegate you more resource credits from,
nice.
From the Leo Finance. Because Leo Finance basically has a big pool of resource credits. As soon as we see that you're low, we just take a little bit from that pool and delegate it to you. And then the reverse side of that is if our system reads your account and you're always at 100% because you're not doing that many interactions, we'll actually pull some of our delegation back from your account and put it back into our pool for other users who are more active. So highly active users will obviously get larger delegations of resource credits and low active users will get smaller delegations, but our system will always make sure that no matter what level of user you are, there's no lag time in your ability to interact on the UI. And do operations on Hive. That's basically the short version.
That's awesome.
And then Blue Robo just posted a link to the full post. Yeah. So if you want to read all of the changes of what happened in the Hive hard fork, you can click that one. It's by at Hive.io if you're listening. The bullet points from Marky Mark. One block irreversibility, increasing HBD haircut ratio, allowing more than one vote per block, remove vote change penalty, support for block log compression, peer-to-peer performance improvements, resource credit overhaul, resource credit delegation, general improvements to improve operation handling. That's kind of another good point is the HBD haircut. So let me pull up this good, who is this by? Pull up the, I'm forgetting. Oh, it's by Ausbit. Okay. I'm posting a link to the this UI made by Ausbit Dev. He basically has this UI where you can track some key metrics about HBD. So if you don't know, there's basically a debt limit. There's a debt ceiling to HBD. So prior to hard fork 26, the debt limit was 10% of, so, and that is the Hive market cap. So basically what that means is, let's just say the Hive market cap right now, it's 235 million. That debt limit was 10% before this hard fork of the Hive market cap. So that means that only 23 million HBD could exist, or basically the market cap of HBD had to stay under 23 million before the haircut rule would apply, which basically would make it so that conversions would give you less. So that it's basically a mechanic that prevents the HBD market cap from outpacing the Hive market cap, since HBD is actually debt of Hive. So one HBD represents $1 worth of Hive debt on the blockchain. So that basically means that you can convert that one HBD back into $1 worth of Hive at any time. And if the haircut rule is in place, it will give you less than $1 worth of Hive. And the reason for that is to prevent basically the debt from growing too large. And you can see what happens when the debt grows too large, just to go take a look at Terra and UST. And that's a great real world example of what happens when the debt grows too large. So Hive has this awesome mechanic with the haircut rule, and it also had this debt limit. Obviously the Hive backed dollar has started to get a lot more traction and focus from everyone on Hive lately. And I think that's a great thing. I think one of the big reasons why Terra did so well is because of UST and having that stable coin. But I think they obviously had some scalability issues, whereas HBD, we can scale without having all those issues. And HBD has obviously existed for a really long time. So hard fork 26, as of today, the debt limit was raised from 10% to 30% of the Hive market cap. So whereas before that, the haircut rule would start being in place at $23 million, the haircut rule won't be in place until, what is that, like 60, just say for easy math, just say 60 million. So now we basically tripled the amount of HBD that can be in existence before we start getting that haircut rule. So if you look at that UI, it says HBD market cap is currently 3.87% of Hive market cap. And if you had looked at it before the hard fork, that percentage was a lot higher. So it's definitely cool to see that take place. Obviously with us doing everything we're doing with the multi-token bridge, we want to see HBD get more widely adopted. This is a great step in that direction. Yeah, so Tony Montana is making a good point. So with your Hive blog rewards, you actually earn HBD and Hive. So you earn an equivalent amount in both. So you're earning HBD and Hive power 50-50, unless you can choose 100% power up. But most people go for 50-50, where they're getting 50% of their payout as liquid HBD and the other 50% as Hive power staked. So he just said HBD stops printing at 20% instead of 9% now. So previously, when HBD's market cap reached 9% of Hive's market cap, you would stop earning HBD on your posts and you would instead start earning Hive. So now he's saying that was raised from 9% to 20%. So that's another good thing. So essentially, you add up those two different changes, and what you get is a more liquid HBD economy, where hopefully more HBD will actually exist. It might sound counterintuitive, but more debt can be good because HBD needs more liquidity.
M-O-A-R, more liquidity.
One thing, about Hive lately, I've been thinking about writing a post and a thread storm about why I've grown a lot more bullish on Hive lately in the past 6 months than I was even previously. You know, I think a lot of these changes are adding up to creating a more healthy Hive economy. And if you look at Dahl's actually had a cool couple posts about Hive and the token flow and the tokenomics of Hive and HBD. I've gotten a lot more bullish on what Hive is turning into, which is a much more flourishing economy, in my opinion. So when you add up all these different changes with resource credit delegations and, you know, the HBD changes, I see kind of this interesting future for Hive and this much larger demand for Hive power in the long run. And then obviously with this HBD debt tool, I think you're going to see a lot more activity in general on chain, a lot more positive economics, if you want to put it that way. So all of this has added up to me being a lot more bullish on Hive and the future of Hive. I know a lot of people have talked about in the past, you know, wanting Hive to get to $10, $20, $30. I think a lot of things had to change before that was possible. And with a lot of the recent changes, I definitely think it's not just possible, but it's actually plausible for that to happen. With what happened with Luna and UST, at least the positive side of what happened, I think a similar impact can be had if HBD starts getting more traction. And I think that after that UST collapse, we can take a lot of lessons away from that and ensure that it doesn't happen on HBD, especially by keeping this debt limit in place and things like that.
Do you want to, because I was just looking to see if we had any questions or anything, but I do not see any. So with that said, do you want to shift gears and talk a little bit about the Leo Finance UI redesign contest?
Yeah, so nice transition. We just posted this redesign contest for leofinance.io. So we're basically, you know, the long story short of the post, and I'll post the link if you guys want to read it, is we, with Threads, we've basically been able to build from scratch. We've been able to go back to first principles and go back to the drawing board and say, this is exactly what we want to build long-term. So let's just like start with a clean slate and build that. And that's what Threads has been. So with Threads, we started with a super MVP. So if you remember, Threads launched on August 4th of this year, which is only, you know, what, two months ago. And it was very bare bones. It didn't really work that well. It was super minimum viable product. So from there, we were able to kind of piece together all the things we wanted to build long term, you know, a better back end, add more features to the front end, stuff like that. So, but the key part of it is that we started with a clean slate. And what we want to do with the entire UI is kind of start from a clean slate again. Obviously, we don't have to fully start from a clean slate. We have a lot of the code base that's still good. But just kind of think about this like a big web, and we're able to just kind of like take certain pieces out of that web and just throw them in the trash. And over time, basically like clean out all the old code that we don't want anymore, and then rebuild from scratch a lot of the pages, features, all sorts of stuff on Leo Finance. So I've already started working on the designs that I want to see. But this contest is about getting the community involved in actually creating their own mockups and creating their own designs for what they envision to be the future of Leo Finance. And the, you know, the next evolution of this UI. So what I want to see is a bunch of different community members come up with their own mockups. And if you want to do one page, or if you want to do all the pages on Leo Finance, you can do as many or as little as you want. But just come up with your own little designs. I mean, you could even just take like the header menu, that long menu at the top of Leo Finance, and just say, I don't really like this menu. I think, you know, we could do these things to make it a better menu. And then, you know, post about it and tag it with redesign in the tags. And then obviously we'll be curating it with Leo.voter, which has 2 million Hive power. And then also we bought 20,000 Leo, and we're going to give away the 20,000 Leo to either one person or a bunch of different people, depending on the submissions and what we decide to use or not use. So it's in essence, it's a full scale redesign of Leo Finance. I think code rewrites are kind of a cool thing to do every once in a while. So I think we started developing the LeoFinance.io UI that you see today about 2.5 years ago. And 2.5 years ago, we had a much smaller team, essentially, you know, one person working on the LeoFinance.io UI. Today we have a much bigger team. We have a lot more people working on the project, whether it's LeoFinance or Cub or the backend. We've got all sorts of people working on the project now, and we have a lot more capable talent, in my opinion. So this redesign gives us the opportunity to not only build a better Leo Finance UI, but also start from the drawing board and find ways that we could just completely improve everything that we've done from the ground up. So that's kind of where we're at with the Leo UI. The redesign, we've kind of scoped it out already, is going to take somewhere between 1 and 2 months to have a finalized product that can go into alpha. And the way that we're going to roll this out is we're going to keep the existing Leo Finance UI, and then we're going to roll out into alpha the brand new UI, and we're going to keep them side by side for maybe 2 months. So give it 1 to 2 months to get to alpha, and then give it 2 months after that to stay in alpha and be a side by side UI, and kind of build a lot of cool features back into the UI that can be built now, but have to be adapted to what our current code base is. So instead of doing all that and creating extra work for ourselves, we're just gonna start from scratch, build everything with better structure. And that's kind of the way forward, in my opinion. A lot of things like integrating threads more deeply into Leo Finance. Because you got to remember, like, a lot of these things over the last 2.5 years have been kind of piecemealed together to create what you see now. So instead of piecemealing more stuff in, we're just going to start from scratch and add all the elements as if they were there the whole time. So that's the goal. So we need your participation. We need people to submit their designs and basically just help us build a better Leo Finance.
Awesome stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing people's submissions. We got some creative design folk in the community.
Yeah, they're super. There are so many talented, creative people on Hive, and we need to leverage that a lot more. We can hire UI UX designers all day long, but they'll never understand the user experience as much as people on Hive do.
Indeed, that is definitely true. I like it. Every week, something new, onward and upward.
Always. Yeah, the team has grown a lot in this bear market. That's one thing that I've been really excited about. And I hope that it's pretty apparent through everything we're doing, DeFi-wise, social-wise, threads, this Leo redesign, Leo mobile. I hope all of that stuff is pretty clear that we have a much bigger team working on this stuff now. And we are easily 10 times the size that we were 2 years ago. And we don't plan on stopping. Just going to keep growing. Nice. And kind of on similar lines, a Nomad Soul has been working hard to organize some new shows. We've got the AMAs every Tuesday, and we're going to start doing something called a Crypto Corner every Wednesday, where we invite other Hive projects onto the show, and we start talking about what they're doing, what's up on Hive. It's going to be kind of like a Hive show every Wednesday. And then every Thursday, we're going to be doing kind of a similar show, but outside of Hive. So we're going to invite project owners and founders and developers and creatives from other blockchains, other projects, and we'll talk about what they're building. We'll talk about what's going on in the crypto universe. everything along those lines. So that, and then in addition to the Tuesday AMA, so you got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday will be, will each have their own live show. We'll be talking about all sorts of topics. And that's going to create a ton of content for us, to post on TikTok, on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Leo Finance, on Hive, everywhere. We'll be posting that content. And then also we're going to start posting it on all the podcasting platforms again, you know, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of that stuff. So there's about to be a storm of new Leo Finance content out there. And the idea of it is kind of turning Leo Finance into this kind of like media empire, where we can start to draw in a lot more new users through the content that we create. So a lot of organic marketing that we can do. And this is something I've wanted to do for a long time. So shout out to A Nomad Soul for kind of being the taking the reins and, you know, basically inviting all these people and coordinating everything and, you know, really being at the head of it.
What was the Thursday call called again?
I don't know if he's come up with a name for it yet. Oh, okay. He sent me the name for Wednesday, which is called Crypto Corner. So.
Sweet.
Yeah, he's typing. So maybe he'll say what the name is.
More content.
More content.
Either way, more content from the Leo Finance ecosystem.
Yeah, it's really, the goal is to like, we want people to see that Leo name everywhere they go. But it's not just only about talking about Leo. It's talking about broader, you know, crypto topics, finance topics, Hive topics. We want to be talking about all sorts of topics, but it all roads lead back to Leo and the Leoverse. A Nomad Soul just posted, he said, no name yet in case anyone had some ideas. So the Thursday show is going to be where we invite founders, project members, developers, just influencers, anybody from outside of Leo Finance and Hive to talk for like basically a round table. So if you have a name for that, post it somewhere. Threads, maybe.
There you go. Thread it up. Get a naming thread going. Name the Thursday call. I'm trying to think of something that's got like kind of welcomes the external.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, ironically, Roundup is probably a good phrase. I'll ponder for a few and create a thread if I think of something. At least better than what I just threw in chat.
Do it. Thursday crypto throwdown.
I can come up with something better than that. Although I guess maybe generic is good since it's all things crypto, so to speak, in terms of can be from anywhere.
Blue Robo's idea, fuck Friday, it's Thursday.
Love it.
I like that.
That's legendary. I
like that. I think we're pretty much caught up. I was scrolling through threads looking for questions, but I think we covered them all.
Nice. What's up? Although not much, what's up with the freaking crypto market? I was like, there's not really much to talk about this last week.
Yeah, I mean, I actually noticed, I mean, kind of over the, we're starting to climb it back, but Bitcoin dropped, you know, like $1,000 over the weekend. Kind of gave back that little rally we had. Pretty much sideways, really.
Still just bounced around that same range. I've fallen asleep pretty much watching Bitcoin. I mean, that post I did a few days ago was just talking about that, you know, how Bitcoin's just grinding. And then in my head, all I say is grinding. Because I think of the Clips song from back in the day with Pharrell, which I had to put in my post, of course. But yeah, I mean, forget about like, it's like, the volatility is even squeezed tighter over the last couple weeks now. But what's funny is, and I put it in my post, like, we've been in this ginormous descending triangle since the all-time high back in November of last year, which is crazy that we're only basically a month away from being a year since the all-time high, which means we probably got like another year before we start really going up again. But yeah, like, we're at the apex of that triangle, and it's like, it almost seems like it's going to be a not event. So I'm waiting like for something to happen. I mean, we're like right up in it to the point where it's just going to push out of it sideways if we just continue going sideways another few days. Otherwise, I don't know. We need some kind of catalyst or something to happen so we see this thing burst higher or finally crack below that 19 level that it's just been holding. But yeah, it was nice seeing it above 20. It's always a little more comfortable. But like you said, it gave it back. And right now we're kind of living on the edge again here at 19.1. I mean, really, you know, you got to see it close, I think, below 18 to talk about like a true break. But this is just crazy. It's been since June, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That we've just been bouncing around on this level. I mean, we poked up to 25 briefly, but outside of that, it's crazy.
Yeah,
that's Bitcoin halving clock.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. 526 days. Shit. I'll see you guys in like 2 years. Yeah. Peace out.
Well, that's the crazy thing is like people start talking about the halving when it hits like 1 year out, I feel like.
Yeah.
6 months out, people start getting excited. So, you know, are we just buying time until the halving and then shoot up again? I don't know. A lot of people theorize that the halving isn't going to have as much of an impact as it used to. Because obviously, you know, the inflation is already low and the attention is super high. So some people are speculating that the halving isn't what it used to be. But either way, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, my long-term belief in Bitcoin hasn't changed at all. I think for most Bitcoiners, it hasn't changed at all. I think what you've seen is just a lot of institutional money come in. I think you've seen a lot of, you know, normies come in, and that's created kind of an interesting market dynamic. But that being said, I mean, Bitcoin really doesn't seem to want to crack 19K.
Yeah.
It's funny to me because I still remember the days of Bitcoin being like $1,500. So to me, 19K still seems high. I didn't get too caught up in the moment of Bitcoin at, you know, 40, 50, 60K. Obviously, I loved it like everybody else did, but, you know, I've been around for a few cycles now, and I know that what goes up comes back down. So,
yeah. I mean, honestly, at this point, I just kind of want some kind of, not volatility, but yeah, just some kind of movement in one direction or the other. I don't really care if we actually go lower because I look at that as a opportunity to buy at a discount. I'd actually be super excited if we saw Bitcoin get down to like 13, 14K because I would personally be adding a good chunk there. And in a way, it's like kind of, I don't want to say it's better because obviously who wants more pain, but I look at it this way. I personally don't anticipate like a Bitcoin bull market kicking off in the next 3 months, right? Like, or before the end of the year. So if that's the case, if I'm going to have to just sit here down at lower prices, I'd rather go even lower so I can, you know, stack more for when we do get that bull market. But either way, I mean, I've been nibbling every time it kind of keeps pushing, like dipping under 19, I nibble, you know, not big amounts, but just, you know, small adds, but mainly trying to keep that fresh powder available if we do get a big leg down. Although I might have applied some of that capital to a non-crypto investment that was just too good to say no to. So we'll probably crash now that I'm illiquid again.
Yeah, you know, I've been buying dollar cost average. I do exactly what I talk about, which is just dollar cost averaging every single day. So,
yeah,
you know, picking up a a couple hundred bucks worth of Bitcoin every day and just slowly buying back.
Cal living on the city streets,
fire trucks, you can hear that.
Whatnot going by. Yeah, I'm surprised your mic picks that up. I don't think my mic picks up that when that happens, but
yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about that in the pre-show, but yeah, my mic picks up everything. I got to
figure out
more of a studio environment.
I'm gonna send Cal the Amazon link to the mic that I have.
Yeah, send it over. I mean, I've got this. I've got a Yeti. I feel like it should be good, but
it should be money. But every time, like, you move it, even like you hear like the ruffling sound and shit, it's like technically that mic is supposed to be better than the mic I have.
Yeah, I think it's just not set up correctly.
It could be.
I got to work on that. I might hire
like
a sound.
I got the arm thing.
Yeah. So. I mean, maybe part of it is that it's sitting on my desk, and every time I hit my desk, you hear something. But
it could be.
Yeah, I may hire like a sound engineer to come over here and set up the studio for all these Leo shows.
Start stapling the foam egg carton, yeah, carton things to the wall.
Yep, exactly.
Cal's gonna be like, turn me up in the headphones.
Yeah, I mean, I want to start doing all this stuff, you know, turn it into a media empire. Then we just have a constant flow of new users from all the content we're pushing out.
Love it. All right. What did I do in the little recap? Yeah, General Crypto Talk, the snooze fest of Bitcoin. I post a picture of the Bitcoin halving clock.
You know what I've been doing is I've been buying Rune. I don't know if that's going to be coming as a surprise to anybody, but
I snagged some more at this point. It's probably a month ago. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's lower than where I bought. Let's see. I should probably grab some more while it's down. Yeah, I bought it like 205, so I'm already down a nice chunk.
Yeah, I mean, I've been buying on the way down. I mean, trust me, I bought it $10, I bought it $8, I bought it $7, but I've been buying a lot down here at $1.50. I don't know.
It's origin type prices. I mean, all you have to do is level down one more time until like sub a dollar. Cause like I'm looking at the chart and it's just like, you know, when this thing moons, I mean, really it started at like 90 cents and it moons all the way up to, you know, the all time high essentially. And it came all the way back down to 3.25. Then it moons back up. Then it came all the way back down to like 3.50, 3.25, held it, moons back up to 13. And then finally it came down and it broke that 3.25, 3.50 area. And since then it's been painful.
Yeah. Very painful.
It makes me think of Clubber Lang and Rocky. What's your forecast for the fight? Pain.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to see Rune this low, but the way I look at Rune is kind of being like a leveraged asset in the crypto market. It's not that it's leveraged in terms of like it could blow up or something, or it's like taking out debt. Leveraged in terms of it's like almost like a leveraged product where it's got like leveraged volatility against the crypto market, where when the crypto market goes down, Rune goes down more than everything else. And when the crypto market goes up, Rune goes up more than everything else. And in my opinion, a lot of that has to do with the way that the economics of Rune are set up with the pooling and the bonding. And, you know, there's this idea of deterministic value. And if you Google Rune deterministic value, I'm pretty sure a post I wrote comes up at the top on Leo Finance. But it, you know, it's interesting to see how the market price actually impacts things like TVL, and trading volume and APY, and also bonding amounts on Thorchain. So kind of taking all of these things into account and looking at the deterministic value, Rune is either going to go to zero or it's going to blow up and be the top DEX in the world. I don't see much of a middle ground for it. I think their technology is far superior to everything else out there in the DEX space. I think their community is amazing. But yeah, I see it as kind of a leveraged product in the crypto space where, you know, the crypto market is not doing well right now. And that's why Rune's price is depressed, but it's even more so than other things because of its kind of leveraged nature. But that being said, you know, Bitcoin cranks back up to 40, 50, 60K again. And I think Rune, you know, skyrockets beyond $20. So personally, I've been buying a ton of Rune. I bought more this morning. I would say I'm actually buying pretty much, I'm dollar cost averaging almost equally into Rune and Bitcoin, which is pretty wild. But I do see a lot of potential in Rune. I think you could look at it as a pretty risky bet though, like if you're being completely honest with yourself. But that being said, I think the returns are very asymmetric.
You know, I kind of have that same thought when you talk about my Rune, like when I bought more, I'm just looking at it. I'm like, I don't want to say like the shine has worn off on the project, but I'm just looking at it. I'm like, either this thing is, you know, going to gain momentum and be like a $20 coin, or it's literally just going to stay where it is, if not like, you know, just being kind of like the sub dollar doldrums. I do agree. I think it's kind of a boom bust. It's like an either or.
Yeah,
I don't, you know, so because in the whole point of like with Rune, I think about, all right, interoperability and whatnot, and, you know, amongst other things. But I guess that as the exciting use case is somewhat worn off, because I feel like there's other chains, other projects that are now going down that route. So we'll see, though. I mean, they have a pretty dedicated community, and that's a big piece of it when it comes to success. So just like the book, you know, 1000 True Fans, it's all about having that community.
Yeah. I mean, it's like compare. So I just posted that TVL to on Thorchain. So the TVL right now is $232 million. Compare that TVL to PancakeSwap, and that's $3.9 billion. So Thorchain is still very tiny in the liquidity space. And actually that TVL, so this is something I kind of learned today, is that the TVL on that's displayed on Thor Yield and Thor Swap actually includes the amount of bonded Rune as well as what's in the liquidity pool. So if you look at liquidity, and that's the way that obviously like PancakeSwap looks at it, as being just what's in pools, it's $103 million on Thorchain. And, you know, that's obviously a decent amount of money, but it's nothing in the decentralized exchange space. You know, you look at, let's see if I can pull this up. You look at like a comparison of all these big DEX projects, and $100 million is like a drop in the ocean compared to the vast majority of them. I think, I don't know if it's on here, but if you go to DeFi Llama, post a screenshot of that, and you look at the, first of all, total value locked across all DeFi projects is $54 billion. PancakeSwap ranks number 8, having that $3 billion number. MakerDAO has $7.5 billion. Curve has $6 billion. Uniswap, $5 billion. And see if Thorchain, I thought it was on here, but maybe it isn't. Oh yeah, it is on here. So Thorchain comes in at number 78 on this list with $103 million in liquidity. So, you know, the other projects that are in that range are like Spooky Swap, what is it? Mango Markets, Wombat Exchange, Loop Ring, Tornado Cash is a little bit above that. So you just look at the amount of liquidity that's actually on Thorchain and you see how tiny it is. And in my opinion, that is both an opportunity and a question of the growth of Thorchain, which is, can it actually vortex in the amount of assets that it needs to really get a lot of adoption? Because right now, $100 million is nothing. It really needs to grow that liquidity. But if it does, that's where things start to get really crazy. I mean, you could see Rune at $20, $30, $40, $50, $100 if that liquidity can pick up.
That is pretty cool.
So anyways, that's just something I've been researching, keeping an eye on.
This is pretty interesting. Yeah, I haven't really explored DeFi Llama too much, but this is that's interesting too on the parachain TVLs. That's interesting. That's pretty cool though, data wise.
Yeah, it's
Even looking at the non-EVM. Yeah, like I'm looking at like even just like when it comes to the chains, you look at like the non-EVMs. Yeah, Thor chain is like nothing. Yeah, I mean, shit, Tron, Solana, Algorand, even Elrond are ahead of Thor chain. Wow. EOS is just a shade under Thor chain in terms of TVL.
Yeah.
And has a bigger market cap, like twice the size.
Yeah, a lot of this is, you know, a lot of what you just mentioned is, you know, VC controlled, and even like look at PancakeSwap having a lot of ties to Binance. The way I see it, probably a majority of their TVL and market cap is made up of, you know, team funds essentially. And I don't think that Thorchain has anything like that. I think Thorchain is very community oriented, very similar to Hive in a lot of ways.
Which is a win and a loss,
right?
Because yeah, the Thor community seems very hardcore, but I think the flip side of that is, I don't want to call it clicky, but it doesn't ooze a welcoming vibe, you know what I mean? And I think that's been one of the things to an extent, even with like the Hive community.
I mean, I think that's a crypto thing too. I mean, even look at Bitcoin maximalists out there, they're very hardcore, and you know, normies don't necessarily like that. They want a friendly, inviting face, not, you know, hardcore maximalism.
Yep.
But I mean, the TVL on Thorchain maxed out, and I think a lot of it obviously has to do with crypto valuations at $550 million. So when was that? That was April 2022. What was the RUN price in April 2022? We were at $11 for the RUN price. So Damn. Almost a 10x from where we are at now. So kind of makes sense if you consider the TVL.
Yeah. Well, the good news is the recap post is done.
Love it.
I'm going to drop that in the chat right now. All of the things. And any parting words? I got to jump for something at 1:30. So,
I mean, just happy hard fork to everybody. Looks like it went off pretty much without any issues. I think what we are going to see from here forward is a lot more HPD liquid and circulating out there. I think that's a very positive thing, not just for Hive itself, but also for us with Cub, PolyCub. You know, our goal is really to build up the HPD liquidity right now, and having a larger circulating supply of HPD out there is a good thing. And like I said, our 5-year mission with Cub is to essentially outpace centralized exchanges for the trading of Hive and HPD. So I would love to see more daily trading volume on Cub than is on centralized exchanges. So a good example is Hive has done $113 million in trading volume the last 24 hours. And Beehive has done $13,000. So we've got a long way to go. But that's the ambition.
Good stuff.
What you got for the people, Cap? You got your recap up so that they can see
it? Recap. Yeah, the recap is posted. So all the lovely topics we talked about today. And I mean, I don't really got much else. Like I said, the crypto market is quiet. We are obviously crypto winter because hibernation is in full effect right now. And the good news is, you know, I guess the Fed and the equities market hasn't really impacted Bitcoin, relatively speaking, over the last month or two, because, you know, stocks are lower and Bitcoin is sideways. So technically that's a win. You know, you call that relative strength. We'll see what happens. You know, Fed's expected to raise again in early November. I guess maybe volatility is incoming. Who knows? But either way, it's been quiet. And like I said earlier, I'm just waiting for something to happen. I'm waiting to see technically on the chart with Bitcoin if something happens with this descending triangle that is starting to look like it's going to be a non-event. It's the hurry up and wait mode. Yep. And outside of that, just enjoying all the progress and growth in the Leo Finance ecosystem and got to remember to get more active with Threads. I haven't turned that into a habit yet.
Yeah, it's fun when you get into it. You know, sometimes I'm just, you know, sitting around on my phone, just threading away for a couple hours at a time sometimes.
I feel like that could be turned into a meme, or even someone can remix a song. Instead of drifting away, it could be threading away. Slowly threading away.
Absolutely.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, I am at the 100 Millionaire Summit next week, but luckily I don't leave until Wednesday for that. So
sweet.
I will be around Tuesday for what might be a somewhat abbreviated call, but we'll get it in. And then I will be shilling Leo Finance at the 100 Millionaire Summit in Orlando. Telling Cal earlier, I got a screenshot of the homepage on one of my PowerPoint slides when I'm talking about Web3. I'll be pushing Leo Finance.
Love it.
Yeah, get the word out. Maybe we can get some people to download the app on the spot.
Sounds good. We will see everybody next Tuesday.
That's the final question I have. Is I know Leo Mobile's working fine on Android. Is it up on iOS yet or still no?
It is not on the full App Store yet. Still test flight.
All righty.
Because so, Apple loves to play games with
Android
listings.
For the win. I will continue hating on iPhones. I will never convert.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Cool.
All right. All right, yeah. I'll see everybody next Tuesday, the 18th.
It is the 18th. Rock and roll. Until then, Cub to the moon.
Yep.
Peace out.
See ya.
Later.